And I knew in my head, I was like, I was the best in South Africa. I'm going to go to this thing and I'm going to do well. And I was just like so confident about it. And yeah, I was just training so much. And when I don't know if I actually believed I would, but I told myself that I would. Mm-hmm. And then it just happened. Yeah. And then I got a third place at World Championships at 11.
Hello and welcome to In the Changing Room, a podcast all about women in sport. My name is Sissy Radford, and I've made this podcast as a way of celebrating women involved in sport. I believe sport has the power to change lives, and I hope that this podcast will show you how. I strongly believe that participating in sport empowers women, and the lessons learned in sports will help us win beyond the field. In each episode of this podcast, I am going to be interviewing some amazing women and asking them to share three ways that sport has changed them. My guest today is Cardew Nell, or as most people know her, Cards. Cards has been sporty since a young age, and these early involvements continue to influence her career and life choices. Originally from South Africa, Cards is a physiotherapist here in Hong Kong and has worked with international rugby, football and volleyball teams. Before becoming a physiotherapist, Cards represented South Africa in karate and field hockey. Cards and I are both on the Women in Sports Empowered Hong Kong committee together, and Cards takes a lead on the mother and daughter sports days we offer. Cards once said that sport is my life, and I will always be grateful for the opportunities that were presented to me at a young age. Sport has been a challenge, an outlet, a lifesaver, a natural antidepressant, a love, a fight, a home, a passion, and a way of life. It has made me mentally and physically strong. All I am looking to do is give other women and girls an opportunity to let sport benefit them, because it will. Cards!
Hey, hey!
There we go again!
Round two.
So a disclaimer, this is actually mine and Cards' second time recording this podcast, because bless Cards' heart, the first time we did it, I had you round at my flat.
Yeah.
Sat in my living room. I was a true novice back then.
Back then. Now you're like, I'm going to do this, pause this, pull this through, put the volume up. And I'm like, wow, things have changed.
Things have changed. But no, 3 months ago, I think, we recorded. And I mean, the content was great, but the audio was truly awful. So I couldn't put it anywhere.
Well, I can't remember what I said. Yeah. It's probably not going to be the same.
For being such a lovely person, you've agreed to do it with me again. So here we are.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me again.
So karate and field hockey, two sports that you've represented your country for. Mm. So you must have been the most incredibly active child growing up.
Yeah, I think I was, but I didn't look it. I was like this little scrawny blonde girl. And my parents were always like, wow, she's got to put on weight. And I was just like, I'm strong. Like, just leave me. Trying to give me protein and stuff. And I was like, no, I'm fine just the way I am. Yeah, so I mean, I started playing sport at like 3 already. And that's like all I can remember, mm-hmm. basically from my childhood. It's just being sporty and playing sport and being in the garden.
And was it those two, karate and field hockey?
My first sport was hockey. Mm. I started at 3 at like a hockey academy because my sister was at the school. So I just started like following her and picking up a stick, and they're like, let her just join. And then I started hockey. Well, I actually started ballet at 7. And then I did that for a year. And then I watched this movie called The Surfing Ninjas.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just was like, I need to do karate.
Surfing Ninjas.
I always imagined I was going to be a boy on a surfboard. Yeah. Like, that's basically what the whole movie's about. Yeah, and it was, I told my parents, like, this is what I want to do. And they were a bit reluctant, but they let me switch from ballet to karate.
Quite the jump.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I kind of did that for, like, a couple of years, 12 years.
And got quite good at it.
Yeah, reasonably good.
Yeah. And how old were you when you were representing South Africa in these two, respectively?
I was 10 with karate, and wow. I went to my first World Champs at 11. And hockey, I was 16.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, my God. So young.
Yeah.
I mean, those experiences must have really shaped Yeah. who you grew up to be.
I think like traveling with karate really changed my life. Mm-hmm. It really opened my mind up to the world and let me see a lot of things that were just completely like out of this my universe. I was just like, these things exist. I thought that was just in the movies, but not really. So Yeah, it was amazing, and I'm very grateful for that.
Amazing. Yeah. That is so good. And we'll talk about how it's influenced career and life choices as we go through. But now listen, the last time I interviewed you, I didn't Google you because I thought, well, she's my friend. I know everything about her, which is obviously untrue.
Oh, gosh, but what's on Google?
I had a Google.
Oh, no. It's boring
me.
Now, I
read that you once ran the 43-kilometre Barclays Moon Trekker and then had a nap and then played a hockey game.
That's on the internet?
Yes. It's in an interview somewhere.
Oh, wow. Goodness.
Now, tell me, are you okay? Is everything going okay?
You know, we all do these crazy things sometimes. I was just like, I have this race. I want to do it. And then it was our biggest game of the season the next day. And I was like, well, I can't miss it.
Did the double.
I was just like, well, let's just see how it goes. And I just let my coach know, look, I'm going to be sore. I can probably only play like 3 minutes. And then you would take me off and then put me back on for 3 minutes. And then the end of the game came and he didn't take me off once.
Oh, my
gosh. And I was
gosh.
Just like... But it was actually fine because when I started moving, I actually felt better.
Really?
So, yeah, I think you could see I was playing quite well. So he's like, I'm just going to let her ride this out and see if she doesn't, like, go into a spasm or something.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. But these big 43-kilometer races, how long have you been doing these large runs for?
To be honest, like, that's not even considered a large run. I work with a lot of athletes, like, that's not really that much.
Really?
But
43 kilometres is a marathon.
Yeah, for me, like, that's as much as I want to go. I don't want to go any further than that. I like that sort of distance and actually a little less than that, like a 20 to 30 where you can really push yourself. Because I'm a hockey player, so it's all about hard and fast and working on speed, where endurance stuff I'm not really that good at because you need to... slow down quite a bit and go for longer. So I've only been doing that since I arrived in Hong Kong. So it's kind of like, it was quite funny. I arrived here and then people were like, oh, there are lots of runners here and they're in the mountains. And I was like, oh, that's strange. Like, all I knew about Hong Kong was like, it's a big city.
Same, where I came.
Yeah, I was like, this is weird. And then I was like trying to talk to these runners and they're like, oh, I ran a 50K on the weekend. I ran a 100K on the weekend. And I was like, how am I going to give these people advice if I have absolutely no experience in running? So then I went online and I entered the New York Marathon because I was like, I need to try.
As you do.
I didn't even run a half marathon before, but I was like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to train and I'm going to work really hard on like gait analysis and like really sharpen my own skills as a physio on myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what I did. And then... I was in Hong Kong not even a year and I'd flown to New York, run the marathon, came back, and then I was like, okay, cool, like I've learned a lot from this. And then I kind of just continued from there, running more on the trails and yeah.
And is it as they say, because I don't love running, but is it as
you've
they say?
You've said so once or twice.
God is forever trying to get me to run. And
come on, sis, let's go run.
And put football in front of me, oh my. But is it as they say that, you know, you really do sort of fall in love with running?
No.
Oh, it's not?
No.
I swear people like romanticise it.
No,
like,
they are, but I don't think everybody's like that. Like, for me, I don't feel that way. Like, I prefer playing sport, but every now and then, like, I do enjoy getting into my running, and it's a nerdy physio thing, but when I run, I think all the time about my technique, how I'm landing, how I'm pushing off, and like that gives me a thrill, like this weird little adrenaline rush, like thinking about it, getting in the rhythm and being like, I got it. Mm-hmm. How long can I keep this on for? Mm-hmm. So that's why I actually enjoy running on the road, because you can keep that sort of consistency. But when you're in the mountains, it's more about like changing it up, and you're climbing and you're down and up and down. So it's something different, but it's not like a massive passion of mine. I do enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, you're very into it right now.
Yeah, I'm running a lot at the moment.
Every time I see a story on your Instagram, I click on it and I'm like, well, where are we running today, guys?
Yeah, well, I just moved to Lantau, so like the mountains are my backyard. So making the most of it. So I love running, I do, but I'm not like, I did a 21, now I need to do a marathon, now I need to do a 50, oh, but I need to do 100, and then I need to do a 100 miler. So I'm quite content with where I am. I don't need to push any further.
Number one for ways that sport has changed you is that it has made you more open-minded to different people and different cultures because of the fact that you got to travel. So you said you traveled from a very young age. So are there any sort of standout moments or things that you saw as a young girl that you think might have influenced you or particular trips or experiences, maybe?
That's a good question. You didn't ask us last. Trying to mix it up now, aren't you?
Here we go. I can't do the same interview twice.
Let me think. The first place I ever went was Perth for karate. And I remember, actually, now that you bring it, I haven't thought about this in years, but I remember there was a man dressed in high heels walking down the street and people being quite like, what's going on here, sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of just like, oh, people do that. Like, cool.
A 10-year-old like, you in South Africa probably haven't seen.
No, I haven't seen that yet. But I was like, oh, okay, cool. Whatever. Like, I don't really care. I went to Amsterdam, and obviously there people are very open-minded, mm-hmm. very liberal, and it's quite a cool environment how mm-hmm. people just live and do what they want to do there and just respect each other while they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think just like meeting different races and different cultures, traveling to like Singapore, Australia, and through Europe, and I was in Argentina, and just seeing like how crazy big the world is. And just being like, people are so different, but that's so cool. Like, no one's the same.
Yeah, just some perspective, I guess, on things. And at a young age, that's a really good thing, because most people would have that post-uni or maybe just before uni, and that sort of shapes the young adult they become. But I guess it kind of shaped teenage you a bit.
I definitely think so. That's the case. And I'm pretty stoked about that, because I think it's changed who I've become a lot. I'm quite an open, diverse sort of person. I love different cultures and different beliefs mm-hmm. and like understanding that and seeing how people live. And it's more about like enjoying what their life is rather than being like, oh, but that's different to me, so I'm not comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy those sort of things.
Yeah, and I think a big part of being open-minded is sort of letting go of control a little bit and sort of making yourself vulnerable, because you kind of you have to take yourself out of yourself and be like, there's sort of an honesty that comes with it, right? Because it's like, okay, I don't know everything,
yeah,
and there's actually loads of different ways of doing things and different ways of thinking about things, so you do have to kind of let go, which I guess in day-to-day busy life is actually a really important thing to have.
100%. And I definitely feel like moving to Hong Kong, that's when I became my true self, and all those things I kind of learned through the years, I kind of blossomed when I got here, and I really opened up and became exactly who I was meant to be, because I felt comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think in South Africa I might have been held back a little bit by societal norms and people's beliefs mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and I kind of just stuck to what I needed to do, and kind of that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Just went through, you know.
Yeah.
The motions.
And did that, the early years of travel, I guess they would have had a huge influence on you coming to Hong Kong and working here?
Yeah, definitely. I was just like, the world's so big, I can get back to South Africa in 12 hours mm-hmm. if I have to.
Mm-hmm.
If things go horribly wrong, I can get home. So like moving overseas didn't scare me. It mm-hmm. excited me. I didn't have any fear. So I was just like, the world's just so accessible at the moment. If things aren't happening the way I want mm-hmm. them to, I can just go back.
Mm-hmm.
I moved here and then I never looked back. And I was like, this is the best decision I ever made.
Mm-hmm.
My older sister also traveled before I'd left. So that made me a bit more comfortable with it too. She moved to South Korea.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, oh, I'll move to Hong Kong. I get to see you all the time.
Yeah.
And then she moved to America. And I was like, what a bitch.
About South Korea is on my list of places I'd like to go.
South Korea is cool. I really like the people.
Really?
Yeah, they're very sweet, very humble. They really try.
Mm.
You know, if they see you, they'll come talk to you and try to help you and stuff.
I bet they love you as well, because you're blonde hair, blue
eyed.
Exactly.
Like,
wow.
Like, who is this person?
Yeah,
no, it's a cool place.
What is the general view in South Africa then, to have been two things, a kid and a female kid involved in sport, traveling a lot, and then a female adult that leaves and works abroad? What is that? Are you part of the norm, or are you a major exception?
I think in the first question, like traveling and stuff for sport and going overseas and stuff like that, was quite unusual,
mm-hmm.
especially at such a young age. It would normally happen a lot later on. But being a female and being quite sporty, I feel like I was always supported by my school and always supported by my family. Mm. If I needed to miss exams and stuff like that, they always try to help me and like shift it or try and send stuff to me or help get credits and stuff in advance. So I feel like it was pretty good. On that same point, though, I always thought I was going to be a professional athlete. Mm. And the more I think back on it, it was just like, as a female in South Africa earning money as a female athlete, I either needed to be a professional tennis player or a professional golfer.
Okay.
And I'm trying to like think of other ways that at that time women would have made any sort of money out of being an athlete, and I can't really think of any, which is quite sad. Mm-hmm. As a man, I think you can now and then you can make money through being a rugby player or a football player or a cricket player, mm-hmm. or a tennis player, or a golfer. So I feel like there was a lot of limitations with regards to where we could really thrive as being athletes. Mm-hmm. Unless we decided to leave South Africa, which a lot of people didn't really have the money to just go and like... I feel like living here, it's a normal thing. Like, oh, send your kid to America. Mm, send your thing
is,
to Australia.
It is, you're right, yeah.
Where in South Africa, that sort of thing doesn't exist. Mm-mm. Like... people go overseas for holidays and like the whole school knows about it. It's like, oh my gosh, this person's going to Europe. That's amazing. Yeah. And like for us, it's like, oh, we travel down the coast or like mm-hmm. maybe go to mm-hmm. Namibia across the border. Mm. Sending your kids like to some fancy school where they could get a scholarship and stuff overseas and try and become a big shot athlete was yeah. like unheard of.
You must have been the famous kid at school. Everybody must have known you. It's karate cards. It's like yeah. traveling around.
My school wasn't that big, so I feel like everybody knew each other. yeah, so the second part of the question, what was the second part of the question?
Now, as an adult working abroad, because there are a lot of South Africans in Hong Kong.
Yeah, they are. I think it's become a bit like more normalized to like go travel and get out. I think maybe when I was at school, people just went to London and they made a lot of money and then came back mm-hmm, with it. Mm-hmm. Like that was kind of the way it used to go. And now I think people are looking at long-term options of living and working overseas because the life in South Africa, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's quite difficult. Like people don't make a lot of money. It's hard work and tax. And I feel like people just have to work really hard to get somewhere where mm-hmm. it's a lot easier overseas. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. people have caught on to that now. And they're just like,
hey,
let's
Hong
go.
Kong.
Yeah. And lots of people, I would have never thought I would have ended up here. But I think one person moves here and then they like tell their friend and then they get their friend a job and then that friend gets that friend a job. And yeah. then like they're slowly bringing your friendship groups mm-hmm. over. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what the South African Hong Kong community is like. So yeah.
Okay, number two is that sport has helped you to find a career in something you are passionate about. So I said in your introduction, and we just talked about it there, you're a physiotherapist. If you had to sort of generalize, what sort of athletes come through your door every day?
I would say mostly runners, mm-hmm. but we see a lot of people who training like Olympic weightlifting at the gyms, yoga, a lot of people playing tennis, rugby, but I'd say majority are like runners and hikers.
Okay.
Because I feel like that's what the general population does here. It's quite a common thing for people to do, yeah.
So a lot of knees.
A lot of knees.
A lot of knees. Enough knees. Yeah. And I guess that is good for you, though, because running is something you love and that you do, and so you can sort of combine your technical knowledge with your practical knowledge and help people that way.
Yeah. So we started a running team about 3.5 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. So we decided we're going to get a bunch of athletes, we're going to put them in a team, nothing too formal, but support them and help them with running assessments, give them some strength and conditioning, give them some guidance from a physio perspective on like anatomy, physiology, performance, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. that can try and help them get to the next level of their running. And then in return, you know, they're part of the team, and we want quite a family environment at the clinic, like not overly strict, like you have to do all these things, mm-hmm. but more just like people showing up. Like one of our athletes, you know, can just show up like a couple of days ago and just come to the gym and come say hey and you know, it's more like an open environment and like a small family, but also at the same time, we're all trying to help each other get to, like, the next level of what we want.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that, and the running community in Hong Kong is amazing.
Mm.
It's quite niche. Everyone's close. Everyone helps each other. There's a race. People volunteer for free. Like, they just want to go and help and be involved. Someone's injured. They can't run. Whatever they can do, they'll be there.
Mm.
Whether it's just, like, handing out, like, fruit or something to someone, or being an MC, like, the running community here is really something spectacular.
And you're going to add to that running community with something you'd like to, an initiative you want to start, right?
Yeah, it's something I've been thinking about for a while, and especially working with WISE and trying to empower women through sport and talking to a lot of runners and trying to get people to come run with me. And they're always so intimidated, and they're like, oh, but you're too fast and you're too good, and I'm going to slow you down. And it's not like that at all. It's quite fun, and we support each other, and we hike, run. It's not like we're running up Lantau Peak, like, a couple of times, and you can't rest. So I want to try and give women an environment where they feel comfortable to give it a go, but not feel too judged, so not a lot of pressure. So I'd like to start a ladies' running group, and I'm hoping to do that in the next couple of weeks if COVID goes away.
Yeah, get out of here, COVID.
Yeah.
We want to start a running club.
You're ruining my plans.
Yeah, but it's true that there's a huge, I think, intimidation factor with things like running, because, and certainly here in Hong Kong, you do see large groups running together, generally keeping up with each other. And I think there's a tendency to look and think, oh my gosh, I'd be at the back, trailing behind everybody else. So I think, like, a nice, open, safe space.
And that's the thing, I'm a runner, so my friends, some female friends, won't even run with me.
Mm.
Now, if there was a group with a bunch of guys in it, there's absolutely no way they would go to that. And I've tried to, like, steer a lot of people who've asked me, do you know of a running group? And I'm like, go to this one or try this one. And they're just like, no, like, there's so many elites that arrive there. And they're just, like, trying to run a PB during a social run. And it's just, like, it puts off a lot of the people who are trying to, like, get into it and feel confident and comfortable. So that's the sort of environment I'd like to provide. So hopefully having, two running groups right after each other, one more social and then one a bit more physio-related and intense for people who do want a little push and a little bit of more information with regards to running technique, gait analysis, strength and conditioning, interval trainings, that sort of thing. And then at the end, maybe all have a beer.
There we go.
Yeah. Well,
okay, I'm in. Okay.
Yeah. Now I got you. I knew I should throw that beer in there.
I love it. I think it's super, super important. I think that would be amazing. When do you think it was, growing up, that you thought, okay, I'm not going to be, well, it's not possible for me to be a superstar athlete. Let's go and channel what I love and take it into something a bit more practical.
Yeah, I think I realized it from quite a young age, like 13, 14.
Oh.
Because I was obviously traveling a lot and we had to fork out all the money for it. So I could see the financial strain of it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't making any money off of it. The government wasn't subsidizing any money. So it was all basically my parents' money or money we got from sponsorships. And it wasn't always easy. So it was a lot of fundraising and golf days and things like that. So I knew from a very young age it was probably not going to happen. So I started seeing a physio maybe when I was like 13, 14, somewhere around there. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is sporty, but medical.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a challenge to get the degree. It's not easy.
No,
so,
no,
like,
no.
Let's see if I can do it. Like, I'm not a massive academic. Let me put my mind to it, see if I can achieve it. So it was kind of just another challenge for me to do. And thank goodness I got in, because I didn't have a plan B. You know when you apply and it's like first choice, second, third choice, and I'm just like, physio. And I was like, oh, gosh, what do I put as plan B? And then I had to apply for stuff like occupational therapy and a BSc in, like, biological sciences. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to do any of these things, but you have to put options down. Thank goodness I got in. I didn't actually get in originally. And then it's a very long story, but they told me I was in, and then they told me I wasn't in.
Oh.
And then it was a mess. I had to go to another university and do a BSc, and then they called me after a month and were like, hey, made a mistake.
No.
You were actually accepted. You need to be back here in 2 days, sort of thing. So I had to pack up my bags, leave everything. I loved this place I was in. Leave all my friends. And then, yeah, jumped straight into a course that I'd missed a month of. They were writing like an exam like 2 days after I arrived. And I was like, what have I done? But I knew that I'd be happy that I completed my degree straight out of uni. Uh-huh. So I just had to make the sacrifice.
There we go.
And go do it. So, yeah.
It all worked out eventually.
It all worked out, yeah. It was tough times, but it all worked out.
Good. I'm going to throw you on the spot a bit, I think, with this next question.
Oh, gosh.
But I wrote it down thinking, well, maybe she'll know the answer, because I kind of want to know the answer.
Oh, okay.
What is something that women that are doing sport or exercising in some way should know about their bodies or should be doing to maybe take care of themselves
mm-hmm.
or just to be looking after themselves?
That's actually a good question, because lately I've been doing so much research on your infradian rhythm. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. So basically, it's like the circadian rhythm is a 24-hour cycle, but a lot of that is based off of a man's hormonal system, which is he wakes up, he's got a lot of testosterone, you know, and he goes to work and he's got a lot of energy and, you know, he's also like sexually powered in the morning mm-hmm. because that's what his hormones have kind of pushed him into. He's very productive, and then in the afternoons he's more social, so there are meetings and happy hour and those sort of things. By the end of the day, he's depleted of his testosterone, and men should go to bed early so that they can replenish. So a lot of women are trying to follow on this circadian rhythm. Like, we do have a circadian rhythm, but we also have an infradian rhythm, and that works on our menstrual cycle. So we have four different phases within our cycles where our estrogen and progesterone are basically going up and down. And that changes a lot what we should be eating, how we should be exercising. But it also, we should be aware of when we're vulnerable to injury, because there's certain periods within the cycle where we are susceptible to things like tearing your ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were talking about, the soccer teams, you know, training according to their menstrual cycles. Mm. It's more scientific than that. They go into a lot of detail of, you know, when you should be strength training, when you should be doing cardio, when you should be resting, when you should be doing like mobility, recovery, mm-hmm. flexibility, those sort of things. So yeah, it's really interesting. So I'm just like doing so much research on it at the moment, and I'm so fueled by periods at the moment. Every time I talk to someone, I was just like, periods.
Oh my God, amazing. Yeah. So the best thing that we can do is maybe look at period cycles and matching sort of our activity to that.
Yeah, because I mean, there's certain times in the month where we can't be pushing ourselves
mm-hmm.
or we could be eating things that just level out our hormones that will make us feel better so we don't feel like drained.
Mm.
And but there are times in our month where like our hormones complement us and we feel great and we have a lot of opportunity to build muscle and get fit and stuff, and we need to use those days wisely, and we need to like build strength and do all the things we're meant to be doing in those days, because it's not going to last very long.
Mm.
And as you start to dip out of that, you need to try and neutralize so that you don't go through any sort of a dip. So I started researching this originally when I did my ACL,
mm-hmm.
And I read this interesting article called The Female ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was quite interesting talking about the female hormones and how it makes your ligaments more lax. Because a lot of women come into the practice and they can literally bend their bodies in half and they're like, I'm so flexible, and they think it's a really good thing, and I'm just like, this isn't good. Like, we need to stabilize your joints, because if you hypermobile through your joints, you're at high risk of injury.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of women don't know that sex and race play a role in how mobile your joints are.
No,
so I have to talk
not.
To a lot of people about that and be like, you know, don't be pushing your joints into these crazy ranges. You need to work on your stability, not so much your flexibility.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I would say flexible would be good.
Yeah, like lots of
flexible,
people.
I'm like, wow!
Exactly. So it depends if you're flexible through your, like, muscular or if it's, like, through your ligaments, because that's two different things. So you don't want your joints to be hypermobile, because then you have no control.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's actually crazy to me how little we know about our bodies.
Yeah.
Like, truly so little. And yeah. Especially as women, like, something that happens to us every month for most of our life, or, yeah, definitely
yeah.
most of our life,
yeah.
we know so little about. That's crazy. We just, oh, it's happening.
Yeah. And it's always seen as such a shit thing, you know? It's like so bad. And like, oh, you're going to have cramps and you're going to feel crap. And it's just like from a young age, we always just got taught about like how terrible the time's going to be when you have to menstruate. And it's like there's so much power we can take out of that to actually boost ourselves and we can actually be in a good place all month if we know how to understand our hormones and like play your cards right and like keep you in that good sort of a level. So I definitely think all women need to pay more attention to that because it's just, it's quite simple science and like people are just no idea.
Yeah.
And I mean, I fell into that category too. So I was just like, ooh, what is this? What? Menstrual cycle? Rhythms? Performance? What?
So, they're all connected.
Exactly.
Alrighty, Cardi B, last one. Does anyone call me Cardi B? Because I think I might start.
I feel like I'm going to have to start twerking soon.
I said to my friends earlier, I was like, oh, I'm recording with my friend's cards. Yeah. And they were like, do you ever call her Cardi B? I actually don't, but that's really clever.
I'm going to do it today.
Today, she's Cardi B.
Look, if people call me Cardi B, I'm not going to be upset.
Listen, I think you, of anyone, could answer to it. I've seen you rap.
Yeah, I'm not too shabby, am I?
Your third way is that sport has made you a confident, independent, and goal-driven woman. Now, if I was really a stickler for the rule cards, I'd say that that was actually three in one. But I'll go with it.
Sorry,
okay?
Teachers.
I'll go with it. Okay. So confident, independent, goal-driven woman. I guess in order to become that, you must have had loud rev. some very solid female role models growing up, or perhaps not. And I want to ask if you did and what role they played in your life.
That's a good question, though. I don't, like, actively think about it a lot. I think I have more female role models now.
Oh, my God.
There is a motor shop outside.
Yeah, that's true. I know. I do often hear things. I'm like, why is there so much noise? It's like, oh, it's because we're opposite a car shop. Yes, go on. Sorry.
What was I saying?
Female role models growing up.
Yes, that one. I think most of the female role models, they were not famous people. Mm-hmm. They were like people within my hockey team that I looked up to, and I was just like, wow, like they're so composed and so relaxed and so humble. Like I was really attracted to people like that, like people who had like egos and arrogant, and I just couldn't stand being around people like that. I thought it was amazing when there was someone who was so talented, so composed, but just so humble, and they're like, I'm just another person. I just train hard. This is something I love. I want to give back. And those are the sort of people I kind of try to hang around and try to see if they could mentor me. So I had a lot of really good hockey players around me. One of them, Leslie Ann George, and she was a national hockey player. And they're just so many amazing hockey players. I'd say mainly hockey players were my role models. In karate, I can't think of one female that was older than me, like, or who was an adult, who was doing well on the karate spectrum.
Yeah.
I can't think of one.
Really?
No, all my role models in karate were men. But it's obviously crazy, it's quite, different. So I was one of the only female karatekas in our group. So I always used to train against the guys, and I used to fight with the guys and stuff. So I don't know, maybe that's why I was good, because I always need to train with them, because there was like one other girl who was younger than me who came up eventually. But other than that,
because I always think when people become like the confident, independent, and goal-driven woman, that they've had such visibility to those kinds of women growing up, you know, that they've seen women achieving things, women doing things alone, women sort of going against the grain. But I guess it's not always the case. Maybe it just comes from the challenges you've gone through in your sport that have got you there.
Yeah, and also I think having a supportive community and family that just like push you when they see you're good at something, they're just like, if you want to continue with this, like, we'll support you and we'll make sure that you can get there. And if we don't have money, we'll find it. And, you know, it was so good having that sort of support system encouraging me to follow whatever sporting path I wanted to. Because at a stage, I was mm-hmm. playing every single sport at the school. And my parents had to sit me down and be like, okay, I think it's about time you need to start cutting back. Because you can't do like 8 sports this year. You need to pick 2. So that's eventually when I was like, okay, fine, I'll pick karate and hockey.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then, I was still dabbling in the other sports if I could. If they needed someone, I'll be like, I'll do it. So, yeah, I'd probably say that was it. It was mm-hmm. just people really close to me.
Yeah.
It wasn't people I saw on TV or anything like that.
Yeah, people close to home. That's great, though.
Yeah.
And I guess being independent is not being scared alone. And I suppose in karate, a single-person sport, not a team sport like hockey, right, that you... from very young then will have had to be put on quite a big stage with quite a big responsibility. And so independence must have come from experiences like that.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it was terrifying. Yeah. But it was just like, when you're there, you can't back out. So you're just like, I just got to walk on there, pretend no one's here, do what I remembered, and walk off.
Yeah.
And that was great. And from a young age, I also went into... boarding school because I just did too many sports and like my parents couldn't pick us all up and drop us all off and stuff like that. So I was like, just leave me at school.
Yeah.
I could get up in the morning to train. I was at school already. Then I went to school and then I trained. And then they would just come pick me up for karate, take me to karate and bring me back to school sometimes in the evenings. And that was it. So it was just like me in charge of my training programs. And I was just super diligent, super strict. I used to write out all the things I needed to train. And luckily, I had a best friend in hockey. She was a goalkeeper, and I was a midfielder or striker. So I used to drag her out with me, and we used to make each other better. And we both made the national team together, actually.
Oh.
So it was quite a good combination that we had going there.
That's so good.
Yeah.
So good. And goal-driven, last question.
Yeah.
Do you remember a time that you had a very specific goal in mind? And this could be growing up, playing national team sport, or even now, or at university, where you thought, okay, from 6 months from now or a year from now, this is exactly what I want to achieve, and this is going to be a steep climb to get there, but I want to achieve it. And then you did get there and achieve it, like your best one of those. I know you've done so many of those, like millions, I'm sure, but your best one of those, or your most proud.
Wow, that's a tough one. Wow, I'd probably say it was my my first World Championships with karate. Mm-hmm. Like, I was 11, and I'll never forget it. The person who came first, she was from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who came second was from Japan. Mm-hmm. And it was me.
Oh.
And I just remember I got called up, and they announced that I was third, and I looked up into the stands, and I saw my parents crying their eyes out. And I remember just leaving everything, and I just ran up to them, and I remember just jumping in their arms, and we all just cried together. And it was just such a beautiful moment. And I was just like, I would have never gotten there without them, like their support and stuff. And I knew in my head, I was like, I was the best in South Africa. I'm going to go to this thing, and I'm going to do well. And I was just like so confident about it. And yeah, I was just training so much. And when I don't know if I actually believed I would, but I told myself that I would, mm-hmm. and then it just happened, and I was just like, wow, damn, oh like, I can actually do this. This is not some crazy thing that you thought up in your head. Uh-huh. It's like a reality. It just happened. So, yeah, and then I got a third place at World Championships at 11.
Oh, my gosh. You were such a remarkable kid. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And actually, I got 2 in that one. I got 2 medals in that championship. That was probably my best championships. Like, it was amazing. It was really awesome.
That is amazing.
I probably said that was that was the best one.
Yeah. That's a really beautiful story. Yeah. I'm sure your parents will remember it forever as well.
I hope so.
Yeah, sure. Listen, cards. Second interview with me.
Yeah.
Out of 10. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, when's the next one? 6 weeks.
Well, so when I delete this audio afterwards and I send you a text of my tail between my legs to say, hey, we need to do it again.
I messed up.
But no, thank you for coming and doing this with me again and telling us all your story.
Yeah.
And things we should know and things that you know. It's amazing, sharing your knowledge.
Well, thanks for having me. I think the podcast is pretty cool. Like, when we did our first interview, I had and not heard any yet.
Yeah, that's true.
And now I listen to them every week. Aww. And it's like a part of my ferry ride in the morning to listen to your podcast. And it's just so many other people who have no connection to you have commented on like how nice it is listening to it and stuff. So from the female community in Hong Kong, thank you for talking to people and just sharing the message.
Oh, you're lovely. You're so lovely. Well, hopefully your races go ahead in the next few months.
We'll see.
Get out of here, COVID. But if they don't, happy training anyway.
Yeah.
And I
maybe
look
I'll
forward.
Rope you in.
Well, I look forward to the women's social running.
Will you come?
If there's a beer, I'm there.
Okay. There'll be a beer, I promise, at the end.
Well, okay, maybe one at the start. No, okay.
If you can handle it, then okay.
Okay, don't test me. Thank you so much, girls. You're the best.